Blog Talk Radio.
This is flight number 914 from Earth to our planet. We will be taking off in 3 minutes.
Mr. Chambers! Mr. Chambers! Don't get on that ship! The rest of the book, to serve men, it's a cookbook!
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
That has to be one of the most frightening episodes of The Twilight Zone I've ever seen. I mean, it's funny that in the 21st century, we're in 2012, we have all this technology, and yet Rod Serling was able to throw it down, not so much graphically, but more about your thoughts. Theater of the mind, truly, folks. Again, welcome to Grindhouse Sundays, as presented by Afternet Radio. The gang is all here, folks. We have a lot to get into, going to give you the best of nerdcore music, as well as pulp discussions, pulp and pop and comic books, graphic novel, sci-fi, fantasy, video gaming, you name it, we will discuss for this first hour. And, of course, batting second, we have Afternet Radio at 7 p.m. Before we get into the discourse, the pulp-flavored discourse, let's get into some nerdcore. This is Return of the Iron Man, Doom Starks, MF Doom, and Ghostface Killah. Folks, excuse the expletives. The N-word will be abound, but hey, it's still nerdcore, folks. Let's get into it. Let's groove. Return of the Iron Man.
Iron Man, the armor-clad superhero of the free world, may be doomed to die. Yes, the life of America's most dramatic Avenger may well hinge upon a delicate sub-miniature component containing the strange secret which keeps his injured heart beating and enables him to live as Tony Stark, one of the nation's leading scientists, head of Tony Stark Industries, and as Iron Man.
Dark sky niggas out, dropping science to let y'all know what this hit about. I hang like the disco ball on the floor. I'm like John Travolta, sway blazing with my chest showing rings in them hard jeans. Please, I'm comfy in the spot, so I'm never here to cover my queen. It's a Theodore movement. Block homie kids with the chocolate booming. Hey, yo, fuck those boomers. Leave those chicks around me, I'll get those boomers. Bang that like Desi Arnaz with the couch and boom. Just keep staring down the eyes of the champ. Anywhere in this ratchet, punk motherfucker, I'd get you black. Bro, like my throat is high. See Rickett Tone with the velvet mask on. Cleaning his glass on when y'all niggas get y'all feet done. I'm in the whorehouse with my man wig, getting his beak on.
The Iron Man.
The world can't touch ghosts.
The Iron Man.
Who the hype is in New York City?
The Iron Man.
Who can't destroy this?
The Iron Man.
Big ghost steps on land.
The Iron Man.
The world can't touch ghosts.
The Iron Man.
Who the hype is in New York City?
The Iron Man.
Who can't destroy this?
The Iron Man.
Big ghost steps on land.
I done walked on fire. Fire. Never got burnt. Burnt. Slept on glass. Glass. Never got cut. And broke a few nose bones. Yo, let off a round or two. And certain dudes where they drop they down when you be squeezing that leg.
All right, enough of that. Once again, that was Return of the Iron Man, Doom Starks, a collabo between Ghostface Killah and, of course, the mighty MF Doom. Folks, welcome to the Comic Shop. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're going to talk a lot about comic books, sci-fi, fantasy, you name it. And I could not do it without my own Enterprise crew. First up, we have, of course, Captain Kirk. Captain, let's get into it.
Let's get it started.
And then, of course, we have Daryl B.
The Alvin Ailey American Dance Studio in Midtown. Let's do this.
What? Repeat that again. Repeat that again.
I'm coming to you live from in front of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater in Midtown. There's my Afro-Nerd contribution tonight.
Excellent, man. Excellent. That's what we're all about. We appreciate that, definitely. Once again, folks, the crew is in full effect. We're going to talk about all things comic book, sci-fi, video gaming, and you name it. 646-915-9620. Feel free to call in if you'd like. All right, you know, first up, Daryl, I want to talk about, well, I guess, you know, the big news really is this confirmation. I mean, we knew this was going to happen once Avengers was able to amass over $1 billion in gross receipts. We knew it was a matter of time, but now there's more of a solid confirmation that the Justice League movie has been slated for a release of 2015. I think it also culminates because of this ongoing court battle between the Schuster and Siegel families regarding the Superman property. So every time there is something that comes out that I guess favors the Warner Brothers Enterprises, then they feel more comfortable and say, okay, we can go forward. So there was some kind of resolution, without getting into a whole bunch of legalese, there was some kind of resolution that came forward out of, I guess, the Schuster case, the Schuster family. And once that was resolved or some kind of resolution was reached, then they went forward and said, okay, you know what, gang, it looks like a JLA movie may come in full effect in 2015. Coincidentally, Avengers 2 comes out in 2015. So you have a literal Marvel versus DC matchup in the cinemas. What have you heard? What do you think? What's up? What say you, Daryl?
All right. Firstly, like I said, I told you guys last week, that was the major buzz. Oh, Warner Brothers is confirming it. I told you. That's one of the reasons we got geeked up last week at the thing. That's what made the Young Justice travesty such a travesty. Because they didn't say a set time, but I heard by the December 2015 at the convention. I heard that. That was the time. They want it done by then. That's going to be when it's going to be in theaters, by December 2015. But here it is. If Avengers is going to be up, It'd be curious to see how close Warner Brothers schedules it to go up against Avengers. That's the first thing. The second thing, the court case, you know what? That's not really big news to me. Why? Because all it confirms is that DC and Warner Brothers will get at least a 50% share of everything that is coming from the Superman / JLA families in perpetuity. All right? They were getting the whole pie anyway. This was a major kick in the face to the Schuster and the family. This was a kick in the face because no matter what now, Warner Brothers controls that money. No matter what. And if you're a part of the Kirby's, if you're a part of the Kane's, if you're a part of this thing is going to be a major hurdle and stumbling block to getting money later on. That all being said, you know, all those people that were scared about Ben Affleck, you know, directing the JLA movie or being named or the rumor, if you checked out Argo, I think you would want him running a JLA movie. Just that's just me. If you checked out Argo, yeah. But again, they can announce it. Let's see him act on it. Back to you, Effner.
You know, one quick thing. You know, some of this was discussed when we had our interview with Mr. Larry Tye. Larry Tye did a Superman biography, literally a Superman biography. And, of course, he went into the early underpinnings, the early development with Siegel and Schuster as young men developing Superman. And he also discussed how they were screwed. And he also went into a little bit of the legalese of the legal elements involving the heirs to the Siegel and Schuster and how, you know, over the years, Warner Brothers, I mean, listen, they were kids, literally. Late teens, early 20s, in the late 30s when they developed Superman, they had not a clue. No one had not a clue that this was going to be some billion-dollar idea that they tripped on. And I think even until the 90s, which is what I think this case was about, they were always renegotiating their original contract. The original contract essentially made them employees of DC Comics, and any creations coming from Siegel and Schuster automatically became the property of Warner Brothers. Well, DC at the or National Comics at that time. Now, of course, it's Warner Brothers. Now, you know, you have people like Mark Miller and Frank Miller and all these heavyweights now that, I mean, they still talk about being screwed, but it's far, far more difficult to screw these guys over than it was 70-plus years ago. Anyway, bringing it up to speed, from this last case, my understanding, they had agreed to some kind of stipend for the family. Now, of course, they want the stipend to be straight ownership. So as Darryl correctly stated, I think there's a 50% sharing deal between the heirs and Warner Brothers. 50% of Superman is better than nothing. So I think that's commendable. But from the last case, they're saying that essentially Warner Brothers won. But it's an ongoing case. This is going to be going on for years. Anyway, JLA is coming out in 2015, and there's also talk that the way the other characters are coming out of this thing is going to be inward as opposed to outward. We know how the Avengers came on. You had all these singular characters getting their films out first, coming to a crescendo with the Avengers. According to experts or people in the know, JLA is going to operate differently. They're going to be the big movie first and the individual characterizations second. They're going to come out after the JLA film. So I want to go to the captain. Captain, what are your thoughts on this, I guess, this inverted marketing strategy that Warner Brothers has, which is different than what Marvel did?
Well, my opinion is this. I think when it comes to the JLA universe and the JLA movie situation, people will go see it. But based on what they want to do, their marketing strategy, their promotional strategy, their whole setup, their infrastructure with dealing thereof, it's not going to be as lucrative because there's no emotional connect with the characters from this standpoint. They're just using the title and essentially putting the story together, which, of course, you'll read in the comic books, and putting the marketing dollars behind it and putting it out. You see, when you look inward into the Avengers universe, there was a connect. There was definitely a connect. You had the Thor. You had the Iron Man. You had even Captain America. You had the women that might not have necessarily been into the comic, but they got into these particular individuals because they were good-looking males or what have you. And they said, oh, he's in this, let me go see this. And that brings in an extra $40 or $50 million, believe it or not. You know, and that's essentially how it works when you're dealing with promotion and marketing. You have to look at everything. I don't like that model. That model is just relying on just saying, okay, Marvel did this. Let's do this over here. Just put the JLA situation out here and just see what happens. I don't like that model at all. And also, you know, if you're talking about a big budget, you don't want to drop big budget movies so much around December or January. It can happen, but it works against you. Superhero movies are very good during the May, June, July, August time frame. Blockbuster means escape time. That's why it's an event. That's why I always would say one event that matters, because during this time frame, you're looking to escape. That's what a vacation is all about. You're looking to escape from your reality. So there you have it, friends. I don't think it'll be as lucrative. They'll make some money, but I just don't think it'll be running away. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, there's something that's troublesome about how they're going down about this. I'm not as excited about a JLA film as I was about an Avengers film. I just have this suspicion that the track record with Warner Brothers in bringing their properties to light has been sketchy at best. If you take Batman out of the equation, and if you take Superman pre-2006, there's nothing. Green Lantern screwed up. I mean, Green Lantern, if it was done very well, it would have been a great launching pad for other DC superhero properties. But it wasn't a great movie, and there was no inference, no cookies or whatever euphemism you want to use. There's nothing there that really said, okay, we see a hint of a larger superhero universe coming from Green Lantern. Green Lantern just didn't do it. They've been doing this thing in a hurried and harried fashion. And I think they know they have to somehow compete with Marvel, but at the same time, they just don't want to do it like Marvel did it. And Marvel, we have to give credit where credit is due. They were far more thoughtful in how they did this. As you said, they had these individual characters, they reached a crescendo, and they also were able to tap into a multifaceted version of nerddom. In other words, last week we spoke about the New York Comic Con. You had all these different nerds that came out because of different aspects of these properties. The women that once before, you would never think you'd see any kind of geek-oriented property that would be attractive to women. But now you have a whole fan base that's into Chris Hemsworth, that's into Chris Evans. They're into these masculine, godlike role models, if you want to use that term. They've latched on, and it's because there was a build-up to this thing. All these individual movies led to a renewed interest. They allowed this thing to grow. The way that the JLA movie, I mean, listen, I could be wrong. Maybe this, you know, once it comes out, maybe everything will be figured out. But there has to be some appropriate planning in this thing, and it seems like it's doomed for failure without them doing the due diligence with just putting everything together. You don't really have enough time to like these characters individually before you put them in this big party, as it were. I don't know. I'm going to go back to Daryl before we go to a transition. Any other remarks on this?
Well, I'll just say it like this, okay? The way this will work, and they're following the model I laid out, is if they don't put the focus on the JLA movie and on Batman or Superman. Why? Because we know them already. Started out with individual vignettes of these heroes doing, battling a threat, all right? Each of them doing it separately, and then have a character like Batman or Superman contact these heroes and say, you're battling all the small fights. We need to pool our resources and get ourselves together and fight this like a team. Now, for Batman, that's out of character, but you could see Bruce Wayne treating it like a business situation like doing research into all of these characters and like leaving a card where the character lives or something saying, yo, we need to meet, with a little bat insignia on the card. You know, something like that. That way,
all
you
right,
get
well,
to know, yeah. That way you get to know the characters, all right, through their individual fights, say no more than 5 to 10 minutes per fight for the characters, and then the whole second half of the movie is how these characters gel as a team fighting the greater threat.
Well, you know, the jury's still out. We have a few years yet, so maybe they'll get it right. But I think it will be interesting. You know, to see these two big heavyweights to come out at the same year, dare I say at the same time. I mean, it's safe to assume that Avengers 2 is going to be sometime in what, May? They seem to have it seems to be May for Marvel. See, you know, Marvel has it set up. Marvel, you kind of know. JLA, they don't have anything, any kind of cement to this thing. Anyway, it'll be interesting. We'll have a lot to talk about when that comes out. All right, gentlemen, let's go to a quick musical break. When we get back, I want to talk about this new book that I discovered coming up, I believe, next month. We're working hard to have the creators of this Dark Horse comic graphic novel. The name of the comic is called Number 13. It has actually a young black cyborg. So we have to talk about this. Number 13 next. But first, this is Blackalicious, Chemical Calisthenics. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Good. Can you say it fast?
I can do anything. I can do anything.
Here we go.
Neutron, proton, mass effect. Lyrical oxidation, your irrelevant mass spectrograph, your electron volt, atomic energy erupting as I get all open on betatron, gamma rays, thermal cracking, cyclotron, any and every mic you're on, transuranium, if you're always uranium, molecule spontaneous combustion, bam. Law of death, net proportion gain, ink weight, I'm every element around. Lead, gold, tin, iron, platinum, zinc, when I rap you think, iodine, nitrate, activate, like uranium, the only difference is I transmit sound. Dallas whistle, Dallas, say you add a little talent in. Careful, careful with those ingredients, they can explode and blow up if you drop them and they hit the ground. Let it flow, yo, just let it go, get back. CaOH, 2-line water, solution of calcium hydroxide, slotted it, CaO lime will make bleach powder, galvanic metal beats stump out louder, dry ice, CO square, refrigerant, NO2 makes you laugh, it's laughing gas, you find it, I'm muriatic acid glue, I'm like oil of the toil, the king of chemicals, energy, heat, gas, waste, all your mass, chemical change, ice point, melt all your raps, atomic wave, cold shocks when you call, we land, fillable gas, keep going, we're beyond, beyond, ammonia, with buzz until the ambiance, the diabetic process, out of calm your ass, after I warm your ass, I give you sodium silicate, NO2, S103, a water glass, borax flux, you're full of brimstone, sulfur, boracic acid, hip-hop preserver, CO2 could never put away the fire, style aromas, it's scientific, the lyrical views would be connected to teach you chemical calisthenics.
That all matter is composed of at least three fundamental particles, protons, electrons, neutrons. Proton is charged positive. By now you guessed, electrons are probably negatively charged. Neutrons don't follow either, neutral in the middle. Only no apology, centered, unmoved by yin and yang ideologies. Neutron, bosons, electron theory, cosmic physical radioactivity. Different points and joints within infinity. Oxygen and hydrogen alive within all types of energy. Within all types of energy, within all types of energy. Within all types of energy, within all types of energy. Inside a world, inside a world, inside a universe. The verse inside of me existing, although I can't see it. Carbon, nitrogen cycle, ionization, heavier than electromotive metals that weigh over a ton. This has been a chemist, black delicious creation. Clean out your desk, put your papers away, cause class is almost done.
All aboard for the night train.
This is chemistry plus calisthenics. I'm calcium plus potassium with magnesium. Use paper of sodium, sulfate, your solvent, chloroform, remedy from the norm, glycerin, pureform, titanium, brain is long way out when the juice is out of water, with vibration for me, that I need to some leisure, but even believe it's an equal to pieces of media, eager to be here, and if you can see, I know what I'm going, I'm thinking, I'm reading, I'm cooking, I'm going, I'm thinking, I'm knowing, I'm cooking, I'm posting. Yeah!
Go!
right, folks. Once a game, Blackalicious, Chemical Calisthenics. Folks, that was hip hop. That was hip hop. You will not hear lyricism like that today. You have, you know, Chief Keef. This is for another show. But when I hear that, it's pretty interesting. All right, folks. Once a game, The Comic Shop, as presented by Afternoon Radio. This is Grindhouse Sundays. We're at the midway point of the show. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, again, 646-915-9620, giving you the best of nerdcore music. You know, something else I want to might be of interest to our audience. You know, when you do the research to pull out these clips and to pull out these different kinds of musical montages, I'm finding out there's actually a subgenre under nerdcore that I'm pretty sure Daryl's familiar with called Nintendocore. Daryl, have you heard of this? Such a thing. I have a few cuts. Nintendo Core.
Oh yeah, you've heard of a couple of songs from here. The Thought Criminals with God versus PlayStation, Roll for Initiative. That's a combined Dungeons and Dragons thing. You got several actors that have made their living just using old beats and sounds from 8-bit video games and 16-bit video games as their background beat as they rap over it. And it's amazing because all they do is go up there with the computer and stuff and just lay down beats in front of the crowd right in front. So, hey, and other nerdcore acts have taken suit. You've heard Adam Warrock on this show use some stuff like that. MC Frontalot. He uses stuff like that. Schaefer the Dark Lord, he uses stuff like that. Hell, even big guys like Lupe Fiasco and They Might Be Giants outside of nerdcore, you know, as an act, they've used video game sound. So, hey, you never know. Yesterday's video games might be next year's hot track.
Yeah, I guess if they get the exposure, but I was also talking about some of the metalcore bands, some of the actual rock bands are using, as you said, the 8-bit tracks from video games and interspersing them with, you know, the rock riffs. So, as you said, I mean, there's the nerdcore, and now there's Nintendocore. I guess this is coming also from the college scene as well, but I figured our audience might have been interested in that. I figured we try to emphasize these kinds of musics because, hey, you know, this is Afro Nerd. You know, so we have to talk about stuff. All right, I want to move along, and I want to talk about
last thing about that. At the last Metallica concert I did, one of their interludes was a 7-minute guitar riff involving The Legend of Zelda. So it's not just the subgenre. The bigger bands are getting into it, too.
Yeah, except hip-hop, the commercial hip-hop guys, they seem to be pretty, you know, same-o. Well, you know, be that as it may, let's go into this Dark Horse comic that I find intriguing. I was checking out Comic Book Resources. Folks, definitely check out comicbookresources.com. And this past Friday, they had an op-ed piece that was talking about this number 13 graphic novel. I believe it's a three-part series, a three-part miniseries is coming up. And as I said before the break, I've actually put out feelers through Dark Horse to get Robert Love and David Walker. They are the creators of Number 13. I believe they probably will come through. The people at Dark Horse seem to be very intrigued about what we're doing. They thought that, heck, you know, we would be perfect to interview these two gentlemen. So just to give a quick rundown, I don't want to give away too much, but they had they gave you a quick preview of this comic, and it's essentially a post-apocalyptic dystopic tale of what appears to be a black child, preteen, maybe 12 or 13 in age, and it's definitely a dystopic nuclear winter kind of scenario. And you see that the kid has a number 13 on the side of his head. You don't quite – you think he's just human. You don't have any idea that he could be a android or a cyborg. Anyway, he appears to be going through this landscape, having some kind of he seems to be in the thralls of amnesia. He doesn't quite know who he is. And he comes across a pretty frightening event. As he's walking around this nuclear winter, you can imagine it's all barren, barren wasteland. He sees another child that's essentially about to be eaten by a cannibal, some of this monstrous cannibal. The child, matter of fact, it's so grotesque, that the monster has the child's leg in its mouth. You know, it's already ripped off the child's leg. But the kid is somehow alive, and she's calling for help. The monster turns around and looks to 13, again, another child, as if it's another dinner. Lo and behold, this is when you find out that it goes into a protective mode and becomes this weapon. It becomes weaponized. Number 13 becomes weaponized, destroys this monster, and that's the end of that preview. So after seeing that clip, this preview, I said, whoa. A, it's dystopic. B, it's a young black cyborg. What's not to love? So the buzz on this thing is pretty strong. So we have to get Mr. Love and Mr. Walker to come in and explain this. I think Daryl B. even referenced behind the scenes. He even referenced that this might be option for a movie. I don't know how it couldn't be option for a movie. Let's go to Daryl. Daryl, what are your thoughts on this? What have you heard? What do you think?
Well, firstly, I'm with you on that. It gives us something we have never seen before or rarely have seen, okay? Young black and a young black cyborg. That we haven't seen. And it'd be interesting, like we all know that new comic stories are nothing less than movie treatments. If it does get considered for a movie treatment and it does go up on air, how is, I hate to phrase it like this, how are African-American audiences by and large, mainstream, going to take to this? The reason why I say that is, you know what? When Dark Horse does stories like this, it's very thought-provoking. They can be violent. But at the same time, like I said, thought-provoking. It'll make you think and stuff like that. This is an area where we've discussed it. Sci-fi and mainstream black audiences don't identify with it, all right? And mind you, whenever it comes to science fiction stories, I've always said that the themes are universal. And for me here, the themes, just from the 3-4-page little preview, the themes are very universal. Family, finding one's identity, and safety in this desolate world. Those are the themes I got from this. And by those themes, that could represent anybody in the world. The thing is, when it comes to African-American, when it comes to black audiences, they hear the word fantasy or sci-fi, technological, post-apocalyptic, and they turn themselves off, like, this ain't really a movie for us, or this ain't really our type of thing. And we got to get out of that mode. So I wish these guys luck, because if this story is good, all right, and these guys aren't the first. There's a great indie writer artist called Ross Campbell, and he's been doing stuff involving young black girls and aliens, a variety of books. And I mean to highlight him, but it's just that audience is kind of weird for the protagonist, and we'll see how well they take to it. And like I said, a great social experiment. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, you know, well, again, we're working hard in getting Mr. Love and Mr. Walker to come through. We can really hash out these issues when they come on. But that's one of the things that was very disheartening to me, Daryl, is that, you know, I love this. I didn't even read the whole thing. Matter of fact, just for further edification for our audience, I believe that was more of a preview with number 13 in a comic called Dark Horse Presents, probably one in the back pages. I'm going to have to backtrack and pick up that book. So I believe there's going to be a number 13, number zero comic, and then 1, 2, 3, or what have you. But before that, I guess there was more of a preview or an extended preview in Dark Horse Presents. So you might want to look that up first and then get into number 13 coming up next month. I think November or December is when we'll start to see this series begin. But, you know, like you said, I'm not even going to blame it on a prospective black audience per se. What you're saying has validity. I'm not even disputing that. But there's such a conditioning process. This is what we talk about on the show coming up at 7 on Afternoon Radio. There's such a conditioning process as to what is expected from black cinema, from black people, that it's not just black audiences. It's no one believes or feels comfortable with seeing black portrayals in the science fiction genre, although there is precedent for it. I remember looking at Matrix, I think Matrix 2 and going forward. In the theater, especially Matrix 2, I said, wait a minute, Matrix is mighty black. Folks, if you really have not paid attention, Matrix 2 is a minority-filled film. You had Cornel West, you know, Corny West, as we talk about him, Dr. Cornel West, but we call him Corny West in a funny way on After Earth. He made a cameo in there. Of course, Lawrence Fishburne was in there. Jada Pinkett was in there. I mean, you know, it was a point in the film where it was quite a few. I think Harry Lennox was in there as well. I mean, it was at a point – oh, also, I think Marcus, I can't recollect his last name, but he was in a film called Panther. So, but there were a number of people of color in The Matrix. So it's not as if we can't see black folk in film, but this one right here seems to really be has an Afrocentric presence. So, yeah, Roy Jones Jr. Yeah, Roy Jones Jr., the boxer, made an appearance in Matrix as well. So it was a pretty fascinating thing to see that. And it was done, I don't think people really noticed. But I noticed it right away. I said, hey, wait a minute, there's a lot of black folks in this film. You know, and it was making a lot of money. But who do you get to play this young man? Now, of course, I'm thinking of Jaden Smith. But not that I wouldn't want to see him in a film like this. But what's the likelihood of, can we go beyond the Smiths? You know, how are we going to have, you know, I just feel like we're going to end up seeing a white cast in this thing. Look at what happened to Awkward Black Girl. Now, I believe that Awkward Black Girl, because of the fighting behind it, you know, the young lady that is the creator of Awkward Black Girl, that is going to go forward with its original intent. It's an awkward black girl, and already they were trying to make it something else. Let's go for the callers. Lines are open. Again, folks, 646-915-9620. Opening up the lines. Caller, welcome to the Comic Shop, 201. What's up?
Hey, guys, it's Q-Star. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yeah, you're a little patchy, but we hear you.
Okay, real quick, I don't have much to contribute. I just wanted to say, can we take a look at The Book of Eli, which was a post-apocalyptic movie starring Denzel Washington? And how did that do? Did that do pretty good? Would that indicate that maybe it would be accepted, this movie, this graphic novel?
Well, you bring up a great point, but you have it. Let's put it this way. There's literally a calculator that Hollywood goes through. Dr. Henry Louis Gates had a series called, I believe, African-American Lives a few years back. And he went into all these different types of African-Americans. And he went into black intelligentsia, black underclass, and black Hollywood. And he had a discussion with Don Cheadle, and Don Cheadle spoke about this calculator where he goes into how you have to have black folks in a film, how you have to match them up. The Book of Eli had Mila Kunis in there, and a whole bunch of other white actors. It's very hard to have a wholesale black casted sci-fi superhero film. That's one of the reasons why the Black Panther is going to have difficulty, because it's going to be in Africa, and it's going to be very difficult, almost unavoidable, in making it a black casted movie in its entirety. Number 13, when we talk to Love and Walker, we're going to get into this. It looks like it's an excellent thing. Excellent. But you see, the idea of a black cyborg is so radical to black and white audiences. Heck, when you started seeing black Kryptonians in the modernized depiction of Superman, in Prince and in Smallville, the white fanboys are like, well, that's odd. That's odd. It's not odd that you go to a planet millions of light years away called Krypton, and that you will still see white folks, right? But when you paint them black, it's an oddity. So we have to be real that, you know, there's a calculator that Hollywood goes through in figuring out this stuff. Q, I got to put you back. You got a lot of background noise. Hold on, I got to put you back. We have another call. We got another call. Let's open up the lines. Let's go to 732. Welcome to the comic shop. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
ECG, I'm back. I can't believe you used the word black folk in your commentary. Oh. The whole thing, my lose the prefix, bro. Lose the prefix.
Okay, hold on. I know who you are. Why so?
No, you don't know who I am. You've heard
me before.
You've been
on the show before.
Lose the prefix. You just said black folk. I say black folk, I get shot. What's wrong with you?
I don't see why. I mean, you know, what's the problem in describing who you are?
I'm ECG.
No, I'm saying what's the problem in describing who you are? Why can't you say black folk?
What? We're all Americans.
I get that, but that's not how it plays out in real life, though.
What has the NAACP done for you people, as I say, black folk, in the last 20 years, except promote diversity?
Well, listen, first of all, this is the comic shop. It's not Afro Radio. So this is more of a pop culture discussion. But I'll answer your question briefly.
All right.
Listen, the reality is, and this is the reality. I hear the utopia in your voice. We would all love things to be that way. The problem is, these gentlemen created this comic book. It's a great sci-fi story that depicts a black youngster as a cyborg. There should be no issue with that. He just happens to be a black cyborg. It shouldn't even be any mentioning of race. But when it comes down to Hollywood suits, they will tell you, well, how is this going to work? This is why I use terms like black folk, and we go into descriptions, because when it comes down to the powers that be, they will take away that kid. They will replace the story and turn it into something else. There shouldn't be a problem with just having, as you put it, another American there that happens to have darker skin. It's just a physical description. But it becomes more than a physical description, because all of a sudden they'll tell you, well, we can't have this. That's the problem. Well, they're not going
to
do it.
No. We can. And 98% of the population has embraced that. But the NAACP and all this liberal shit and all this freaking diversity things, the black, the white, just America, man. We're all Americans. And the more you promote America, that's what we are, because the only people who fuck with us are the people that ain't Americans.
You know what? Hold on. I want Daryl to jump in on this, because Daryl's pretty passionate about this stuff. Daryl, explain this to ECU.
Okay.
ECG.
All right, this guy, all right, you're not listening to the conversation, all right? We just came off a couple of weeks where we talked about how people said that the Black Panther film is not feasible, but yet an Asgard could be made, all right? A Black Panther film is not feasible, yet we do things on alien worlds. And why isn't it feasible? Because they thought that a major black superhero movie would not work with a black protagonist, a black villain. And notice how I said black. I'm not saying African-American. Black. All right? Black. All right? Let's do it like that. I call people folks all the time. All right? White folks, black folks, Asian folks, Latino folks. I've used that word all the time. That does not have a negative connotation. It's my easy way of saying people. They're folks. You know, it's nothing against them. They're just a bunch of people. It's better than saying the bad thing. They're just regular people. Our point here is we are in the minority of the minority. All right? We are black fantasy and sci-fi fans. Right? And we've had black people talk to us outside the show, during the show, that, oh, why are we doing this? You know no real black people are in these films anyway. We have each heard that. We have each heard that. That's what we're trying to express here. This is going to be, if it does get option for a film or get considered, you're going to have two things at work here. A young black protagonist and a young black protagonist that's a cyborg. Outside of Attack the Block, the brilliant film done last year, you don't really see young black actors and actresses in these films. That's all we're saying. We brought up Denzel Washington. That was cool. We brought up Will Smith. That was cool. They are bulletproof. They know they have a set audience and a set number of bucks that are going to come in and watch the films no matter how bad they are. That's the whole point. That's why we're saying this is going to be a great experiment because largely Jaden Smith might be too old when this finally gets to be a film. It's going to have to be an unknown black character in the lead. And we don't know how that's going to play out. That's what we're saying.
You know, oh, yeah, ECG. One quick thing. We're going to have to wrap this up, but I want to say one more thing to ECG.
No. I accept that. I apologize. I was talking on a grander scale.
Let me tell you something.
If we're all folk, we're folk.
ECG, let me tell you something. I believe in the utopia. At one day, we should be able to just put these films out without all this pretense of, hey, this is just a great sci-fi film. This is just a great fantasy film. But what happens is it gets filtered through society, and it becomes something else. I'll give you a great example. In the what's the film, Daryl, that was out, the series with the Hunger Games. In the Hunger Games, you'll love this, ECG. The Hunger Games, it's in the future. There's no mentioning of race. There's no mentioning of race, right? But then you have the Twitter people, young girls, ECG, young girls coming out saying, "Well, why was this character black? Why did all the good characters have to be black?" I'm sitting there, the book described them not by race. The author was sophisticated enough, ECG, to say, well, this character is tall or short. She's pretty with brown skin. She's whatever. They didn't go into black or white because it's the future. We're supposed to be beyond race, right? So when the film comes out, ECG, beautiful little girl in the film, by a pretty young actress, child actress of color. She gets barraged with all kinds of racism, and some of the Twitters say, well, I didn't feel as sorry because she was black and she was killed. Cute girl. These are young people, ECG, that the movie is the future. It's not about race. The book that the movie was based on just described them. So they were amazed that, you know, well, Lenny Kravitz was in the film. Some of the characters just happened to look the way that they look, and they got a lot of hate mail. Why? Why? This is what I'm talking about. It's a little...
I understand.
Listen, it's a great notion. We have to work to see that.
And And I am going to keep calling and talking about losing that, babe. Lose
right.
The three pitch.
All right, ECG. Speak to you. All right. I don't think he gets it. Daryl, are you still there, Daryl? Where's Daryl?
Yeah. Again, when other people stop bringing race into it, we'll stop bringing race into it. But the problem is race is always an issue, so we have to look at it that way. Sorry. Hey, I'm the evil guy on this show, and I tried to be positive about this, and he made me go negative again. I can't win.
No, not negative. You hear me now? You're bringing race into it. There is no race. We're Americans. Forget the race. We're Americans.
Forget the race.
We can't forget race. We cannot forget race if executives in making these movies are bringing up race. We're black. We're looking at it from a black perspective here. All right? If they're bringing up that a black movie, you know what? Forget it. I tried. This is making veins pop out of my head. Go ahead, Effner.
We'll have to address this another. You know what? I'm not going to go to a musical break, gentlemen, because they're already. See, when it gets hot topics like this, the time flies. When you get into, kind of the minutia of sci-fi, it drags. But when you get into the hot button issues, it flies. So I want to make a quick transition. Actually, I think what else we need to be able to speak about? Oh, you know what? Quickly, Daryl, talk about Arrow. We never spoke about Arrow.
Arrow is simply this. Arrow is CW's take on Green Arrow and his mythos. They've done fine with the first two shows so far. They've introduced Black Canary, not as Black Canary, but as how it is. They introduced him, his family, his supporting cast, that's no problem. It's the CW. It's the CW's interpretation of Green Arrow. And you know what? I don't have a problem with the show so far. They're doing a good job building up everything. The one thing that I wish they didn't do is they are trying to make him into Batman with inner monologues as the scenic thing goes. Like, I was here. Lord knows what's happening in the city. And I'm like, you don't need to make him into Batman. He is not Batman. He's a little different than Batman. Sure, he's copied a lot of Batman things, but he is not Batman. They have taken the Oliver Queen that we got used to in Smallville. Forget about Mr. Hartley. I hope to see him in something else again, but forget about him. This guy is brand new, and they've made him a little bit more serious. He's still a playboy, but you literally can scratch Oliver Queen out and put Bruce Wayne here because that's how they're portraying him. Effner, back to you.
Yeah, you know what? I want to back up a little bit. You know, we were talking about 13, this dystopic black cyborg. The captain had a point that I want him to go into quickly, and then we'll go forward with Arrow. Captain, tell us, you know, give us your spin on 13, number 13.
Well, there's a couple of things we missed that we essentially missed with that. All right, 1-13 with the title. 13 is numerology, and it stands for manifestation. And when you're dealing with a post-apocalypse, you're dealing with a manifestation. So that was definitely excellent. Also, something that should have been addressed was that how is the audience in general? We talked about sci-fi and everything, but when you have an android who happens to be black and he's running around looking for his father, I think that might be a little too real for black people. I think that might be a little too real for a lot of people. It's just something to think about. Not only that they say that black people are not into sci-fi, that aspect is fine, but the fact that you have a black android running around looking for their father, how is that going to be taken? Just food for thought. That's all I wanted to say. That's all.
Well, you know what? I thought about that, too, because it's father/creator. But there isn't. There is an analogy there. There
That's
is an illusion
point.
There. Yeah, but Daryl, you know, listen, we just got off the phone with ECG. You know, when it goes through the black spin cycle, it's still perceived differently. Especially, okay. especially the uniqueness. You know, we've seen countless. I hate to use the term race, and it really is kind of funny to talk about race when you're talking about a cyborg, but or an android. But with a, you've seen countless whites portraying cyborgs, and there's always, and you're right, there's always been this quest for who is my creator. That's like a very typical theme in writings and in cinema. It's very typical, right? But when you deal with a black cyborg, unfortunately, people are going to make some kind of connection to that. It is going to be perceived as real or uncomfortably real. And this is where, you know, I'd be curious to see just what changes will be made to make people comfortable if a number 13 hits the screen. You know, gentlemen, well, we've got about 3 minutes remaining. I just want to say a quick thing about Arrow. I have yet to see it. I don't know. I can see Green Arrow in print. I buy the Green Arrow comic. The whole connection to Batman is a difficult one because the early Oliver Queen was very much a Batman analog. Green Arrow had his teenage sidekick, Speedy. Batman had Robin. In the beginning, Oliver Queen was also a corporate wealthy person on par with Bruce Wayne. He was definitely a contemporary or a colleague of Bruce Wayne in a sense. At some point in the 60s, he became this person who lost his money, and then he became this 60s radical guy. He became a Bill Ayers type, really. He became a Bill Ayers superhero, if you want to get into that. And then now, with the DC 52, he's back to having money again. So he's back to being a Bruce Wayne analog. So I think there's something there with that. I think, and we all know that the CW, even when Smallville was around, was always trying to allude to some kind of Batman-like character, and they never were able to pull it off successfully, and they still haven't. So this is why you have Arrow. If you can't have Batman, you're going to have Arrow. All right, gentlemen, it's been real. We've got to go next door. We have another hour to do. Another hour of a different sort, Afternoon Radio or Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. It has been fun, fascinating, and real. Any parting shots, Daryl, before we get on up out of here? We got about a minute or so remaining.
Guys, enjoy. Hopefully DC doesn't mess this up. And my first stage dive tonight, I'll be thinking of you.
Spawn for the beard.
All right now.
Thanks not.
Appreciate it.
Well,
As I understand it, this is a free country. Man can live wherever he wants.
Free country? Man, I should fuck you for saying that stupid shit alone.
Yo, man, your Jordans are fucked up.
Damn, man, you might as well throw them shits out.
Them shit is broke.
Man, it looked at good before he messed up. He did this shit on purpose, man. He was even talking about your mom.
Oh, that's how that shit would make me so hard.
Yo, man, how much you pay for him?
$100 American dollars.
$108 with tax.
I give him $100 headache.
Look, you're lucky the black man has a loving heart. Oh. Have you seen me coming? Man, you cross the street quick.
I'm out of here.
Yo, man, bring your feet. Come on,
sir. Take his bike. I should make you buy me another pair. Black Panther, whoop his ass.
Take his bike.
Take his ass.
Man, you're lucky I'm a righteous black man. I want you to be in serious trouble, man. Serious.
Fuck him out.
Then why don't you move back to Massachusetts?
I was born in Brooklyn.
Oh, dearly
beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
You're lucky the Afro Nerd has a loving heart. The great Giancarlo Esposito, folks, Do the Right Thing, a classic. Would you believe it's over 20 years? I believe it came out in 1989, folks. Time is moving, moving, moving. As is this show already, 7.02 p.m. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Feel free to jump on in. Give us a call. Give us your opinion, your protestations, your questions, your comments. The water is warm. Don't be scared. Folks, we have a lot to get into, a lot to cover for the next hour. Again, welcome to Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. First up, some groove. This is Rock and Roll by the mighty Mos Def. Yasin Bey, I think, is what he goes by now. Rock and Roll, Mos Def. Let's groove.
Alert the squad.
Rock, roll, huh.
Alert the squad.
Rock, roll, huh.
My grandmama was raised on a reservation. My great-grandmama was from a plantation. They sang songs for inspiration. They sang songs for relaxation. They sang songs to take their minds up off that fucked-up situation. I am, yes, I am the descendant of those folks who backs got broke, fell down inside the gun smoke.
Black people,
chains on their ankles and feet. I am descendants of the builders of your streets.
Black people,
descendants to your cotton money. I am hip hop.
Heavy metal for the black people.
I am rock and roll.
Rock and roll. Rock and roll.
Been here forever. They just ain't let you know. I said Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Chuck Berry is rock and roll. You may dig on the Rolling Stones, but they ain't come up with that style on their own. Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Little Richard is rock and roll. You may dig on the Rolling Stones, but they ain't come up with that shit on their own. Guess that's just the way it goes. Steal my clothes and try to say they yo.
Yes, they do.
Business is so filled with pins and hoes. Trying to take.
okay, enough of that. Rock and roll, Mos Def, a.k.a. Yasiin Bey. It's AfroNerd, folks. Another show. More to discuss. I could not do the show without my partner in White Collar Crime. Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now, if we lived in a world where race is not a factor, age is not a factor, and sex, male, female, is not a factor, that would be interesting. But you know what it would probably be? It would probably be a world like Logan's Run. But if, when you turn 27, it's a wrap. It's finished. It's over. Back over to you, Sir AfroNerd.
Yeah, you know, the captain's referencing the last call. He's become a regular caller, and we welcome all comers. We want everyone to come to AfroNerd. We're not into this. You know, I don't even want to call this such a quote-unquote black show because we discuss all types of things here. Heck, we'll talk about, you know, we didn't talk about it, but we'll talk about the elongated man. You know, we'll talk about Superman on AfroNerd. So it's not about everything being about black, black, blacky, black. It's not always about that. But we live in reality. And my problem with that young man is that the issue is not your title. The issue is the meaning that is ascribed to your title. Because someone is tall or short or black or Latin or Asian or Hispanic or what have you, or Native American, those are just benign descriptions. Let me repeat that, Captain. You know what I'm talking about. They're just benign. Being black should just be the same as being tall. But the issue is, when you say you're black, all of a sudden there's a whole lot of different meanings that are ascribed to being black. If being black was just a benign characteristic as what it is, we wouldn't be having these conversations. If you could make a movie with a black cyborg, which is what we were talking about in the comic shop, you just put a kid who happens to be black who's a cyborg. But when it goes through the Hollywood machine, racial politics plays a role. That's it.
Malignant.
Yeah, it's malignant. Thank you. It's malignant. Come on now. Let's get into reality. We're not in the utopia yet. We're not. You know, if Barack Obama was just the president, if he was just the president, this would not be an issue. But his ethnicity comes into play sometimes. Tell those folks to stop hanging his empty chair in effigy. Tell those folks to stop telling his wife to go back to Africa and eating bananas and all kinds of wildness. Come on. Chicken and collard greens wafting from the White House. This is what we're hearing. We're not in utopia, sir. We're not. All right. Shouting out ECG. folks, AfroNerd, featuring Captain Kirk. We have a lot to get into. You know, this goes in reverse. Now I got to hand it back to you black folks. I got to pass the ball back to you black folks now. You're messing up. More foolishness. More foolishness, Captain. I got to keep it 100. Jay-Z and his funky behind. Listen up, folks. There's a brewing controversy. That's the new Franken word. The new Franken word, controversy. Barclays Center finally opens up. It was always just a thought. Now we have a place for the Nets to play. It's definitely going to be on par with Madison Square Garden. It's the creme de la creme are showing up in downtown Brooklyn at Barclays Center. Anyway, last week Jay-Z had an 8-day concert in his haunting grounds, downtown Brooklyn. Well, not really his real haunting grounds. Downtown Brooklyn is a bit more moneyed than Marcy Projects. That's just the way it is. Anyway, people seem to take umbrage with there being metal detectors at a Jay-Z concert, Captain. They're confused. They're crying racism because they had metal detectors at Jay-Z's concert. And when Barbara Streisand showed up after his concert at the same venue, they did not have metal detectors. So now people are crying racism. And the Afriner puts his hands, puts his head in his hands. Explain to me. We have a clip to go into. Explain to me, where am I missing the boat on this? What's wrong with me? What's wrong?
Well,
I'm missing something.
Well, this is a very interesting situation because you're dealing with a person that actually, from a security standpoint, worked the Barbra Streisand concert. And I've worked plenty of rap shows or rap music that will be being played. And when you get the call to do the security, this is what happens. For something as far as Barbra Streisand, they tell you to be in the suit and you give directions. That's what they tell you to do. Stand up, go over here, bathrooms are over here. For rap, because rap is not necessarily that the rap is bad, it has a street element. The music has a street element. And though you're dealing with someone such as Jay-Z, you get all different type of people who like Jay-Z. You'll get millionaires. You will get the person that went to Yale, that went to Harvard. They like Jay-Z. You'll get the person who's a policeman who likes Jay-Z. You get white, black, Asian. You get the geek. You get the nerd. But also there is a street element. Having worked these type of shows, I can tell you there's definitely a street element. And when you get the call, they'll tell you, being all black, bring your baton in case things get a little hectic. And it does get hectic sometimes. Good thing that you're working with a good crew. Not when you go to the Streisand. The Streisand situation, you're dealing with people that are 40 and up. And the 40-year-olds do not really want to go to the Streisand concert show. They're bringing their mother, who's 65. She wants to see. And they're like, they're twiddling their thumbs and everything else. That's who's there. It's older people, retired people. They're not getting into anything. Sometimes a person falls down and you have to call the ambulance. Believe it or not, this does happen. It's a whole different thing. It's just as if you were doing a country music. Now, with country music, because there's a certain element in country music, you have to deal with some white trash. And there's certain things that white trash that they do. Now, don't get me wrong. There's going to be all different type of people in there because people like country music. You're going to have rich people. You're going to have lawyers. You're going to have doctors. You're going to have the person who went to Yale, Harvard. You're also going to have the policeman. You're also going to have what we call white trash there. So you have to come appropriate for what white trash does. And that's what happens with the music when you're putting on these shows. I'm an experienced individual, and I can tell you, for the Jay-Z, metal detectors. For Barbara Streisand, you don't need it. That's based on my experience. Now, in a perfect world, they should be metal detectors everywhere. You should say, if they're getting metal detectors, you should get metal detectors over here. Now, what happens with black people, they cry racism because the individuals that happen to be doing the street act at the Jay-Z concert sometimes, getting into it, just happen to be black. It's not so much that. It's just that what it is, there's a street element. So certain street things will happen. And the venue has to protect themselves. Also, the insurance for the venue is higher for these type of acts. It'll be lower at a Streisand. So back over to you, Sir Afriner.
Listen, it's only been within recent years that on the insurance side, that they've actually allowed these acts to become insured. I think going back to the Run DMC tours from the mid-80s, I remember the Nassau Coliseum also in New York, but further out east, I believe there was a stabbing going back to the 80s from a Run DMC tour. And ever since then, there have been issues Matter of fact, there was a moment in time, maybe a decade. I know the captain could talk about this. It may be a decade where these rap acts really were not allowed to tour. I think Puffy ended up becoming, you know, because of his the mid to late 90s, he had these elaborate shows where they started opening up the possibility for these venues. But it was a period of time going, you know, from 85 to 95, let's say, where you could not get insured. You could not insure these rap acts because, hey, whether it's a house party or a larger venue, it comes off that a certain tier level within the African-American experience, that when these folks get together, they cannot get together respectively. It's something pops off, Captain. We've seen it time and time again. The same DVD is put in the DVD player, and it's on repeat constantly. We see this all the time. So now these folks want to pretend that the fan base that goes to see Jay-Z is the same fan base that wants to see a 70-year-old actress/singer or singer-songwriter who sings show tunes and film scores, that she has the same, she brings the same nonsense with her audience as you would see with a Jay-Z thing. Jay-Z is singing Big Pimpin' and Niggas in Paris. Come on now. Can we stop this?
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Yeah. Did you not too long ago see Prince? What type of people did you see there? How much nonsense did you see at the Prince concert?
Well, you know something, Captain? The Afro nerds, well, how can I put this? I'm trying not to be comical. Shouting out Tokyo Mike, by the way. I knew he was probably listening. You know, who I saw at these concerts? You see a multiracial crowd. I believe, because I have Q-Storm on hold. Q-Storm can even speak about this. Ironically, the way Prince gets down, because he has a black audience and he has a white audience, I believe at one occasion he had an all-black audience in the Jersey show. And in New York he had a multiracial or even maybe a white audience. But you will see varied ethnic groups, varied ages. You see brothers with the Asian girlfriend, the white girlfriend. You see the black woman with the white with the white boyfriend or white husband. You see there was some pot smoke wafting in the air, unfortunately. I met Marc Morial, met him personally, who was a former mayor of New Orleans and also the current head of the Urban League. So you meet some heavyweights there. You meet, you know, Afro-Nerds there, ironically. Ironically. Go figure. What do you think about that, Captain?
Well, you see, the point is, you know, there's not really a little weed smoke. You know, that comes a lot of times with musicians.
Well, that's the rock and roll side of things.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the rock
that,
and roll.
That comes with it. That comes with it. It is illegal, but, you know, the main thing is there wasn't anybody there mixing it up. That's the main thing. When you do the rap thing, there's going to be some mixing up. There's going to be. That's
now,
the point that I'm making.
Now, the funny thing is, Prince does have his, quote-unquote, street gangster fan base. But when I was going to the venue, they were outside lauding over Prince, but they weren't going inside. They were talking smack respectfully, talking smack outside, but they were not indoors. What's that about? You know, the Urban Alternative crew are going to go there. Janelle Monáe was the opening act. So, I mean, it's a different thing. It's a different thing. You know what? Let's go to this clip first. This is from Jay Thomas, a legendary radio personality. He has his own imprint, courtesy of SiriusXM. A caller calls in to attempt to lambaste Thomas, saying that you're always going into black and white, and Thomas tells him reality. He schools him, why are people pretending that his fan base is not different than Barbra Streisand's fan base. I don't know what is that? Okay, this is Jay Thomas with this caller talking about this whole metal detector controversy. Hold on, folks.
Matt of Houston, Texas. Yes, Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, Jay, man, I listen to you all the time, and it never fails that anytime you talk about something that got something to do with crime or anything like that, you always go to the black and white issue. You know, just because Jay-Z got metal detectors at a concert, that ain't got nothing to do with no black and white. That ain't got nothing to do with black people.
But that's what the article was about, is black people are upset that there were metal detectors set up for Jay-Z's concert and not set up for Barbra Streisand. It's not us making up that angle.
No, Shuley, I'm not saying you're making up no angle, but what I'm saying is Jay always have to do this. He goes to the black and white issue every time, no matter what the situation.
Yeah, well, you know what?
What other issue is there, sir, in this situation?
Hold on one second. I've lived in, you know, every neighborhood and every all these kind of towns south and everything else. In Los Angeles, you will not have the crime in Beverly Hills that you will have in South Central. In New Orleans, we don't have the same amount of crime in certain neighborhoods that you're going to have in like the Ninth Ward or whatever. Now, it's difficult for me to say it any other way. But in the lower, more downtrodden, you know, less expensive areas, you have more crime. And so you can call it racist if you want to. But shit, if I threw a fucking map up and you and I were talking about crime and we were trying to figure out where to go to stop it, even in your town of Houston, I don't know where the section is that has the most crime, we would go and there'd be more Hispanics and more black people than there were white people in the high crime areas. How do you talk about that without you thinking that I'm racist? What do you suggest, is
built,
what I'm saying.
The Brooklyn Stadium that's built in a bad area or a good area?
I don't know. What area is it, Garrett?
It's decent.
Okay, okay.
It's the middle. It's in the middle.
Pretty good area.
The stadium don't move. So, whether it's a Jay-Z concert or a Barbra Streisand concert, the stadium's still in the same fucking place.
It doesn't mean the same people come.
Right, the Jay-Z group is more likely to carry weapons and maybe cause some shit than Barbra Streisand's fans.
And why is that?
Because Barbra Streisand fans are white women and they're...
Hold on a second. Without even saying anything racial... Let's just say that more active, angry young people would go to see Jay-Z than tell you what, if Bill Cosby were performing, I don't think they would have metal detectors. Does that make you feel better?
No, it don't make me feel better.
Matt, let me ask you this: If you had a choice, and you had a choice to go to a concert and find a chick to get laid, would you pick a Jay-Z concert or would you pick a Barbra Streisand concert?
I'll pick a Jay-Z.
All right. Enough of that. I think you get the point. We're going to move to a quick musical break, Captain. But any
That was good. That was real good. I thought that was good.
The caller, he's asking a question that he doesn't really want the answer to.
Absolutely.
He's asking, well, why is that? You know, we talk about that all the time. Why can't these folks go to a Jay-Z concert and act like, you know, respectable citizens without a whole bunch of rah-rah? Why must rah-rah accompany a Jay-Z concert? But then Jay-Z does the kind of music that he does that attracts the rah-rah type of guy. I mean, it is what it is. I find it reprehensible that there's this contingent of people who are feigning being upset and feigning being disrespected because of this metal detector issue. They need to work on stop the nonsense, stop the chicanery, stop the minstrelsy and the coonery. Knock it off. Knock it off on the part of these people that want to pretend, that want to go into some kind of state of denial that the Jay-Z crew are the same as the Streisand crew, like they're battling each other.
Come on. Come on. I want to go to Q. I know he had a lot of background noise, and then we're going to go to a musical break. Q, are you still there? Q Storm. Q. All right. I guess I thought I had him on the hold because I knew he wanted to listen to the show. All right. Captain, let's go to a quick musical montage. And when we get back, I want to talk about another issue dealing with Romney, where I believe Romney was actually onto something. I believe Romney was correct. But political correctness somehow makes people want to play the phony game. People want to be phony. Come on. Knock it off. All right, folks. Let's give you a little bit of Afro-punk. This is Afro-punk / Afro-funk. This is Room 2012. Let's groove, folks. We'll be right back.
I'm not in favor of new pieces of legislation on guns and taking guns away or making certain guns illegal. We, of course, don't want to have automatic weapons, and that's already illegal in this country to have automatic weapons. What I believe is we have to do, as the president mentioned towards the end of his remarks there, which is to make enormous efforts to enforce the gun laws that we have and to change the culture of violence we have. And you ask, how are we going to do that? And there are a number of things. He mentioned good schools. I totally agree. We were able to drive our schools to be number one in the nation in my state. And I believe if we do a better job in education, we'll give people the hope and opportunity they deserve and perhaps less violence from that. But let me mention another thing, and that is parents. We need moms and dads helping raise kids. Wherever possible, the benefit of having two parents in the home, and that's not always possible. A lot of great single moms, single dads. But gosh, to tell our kids that before they have babies, they ought to think about getting married to someone, that's a great idea. Because if there's a two-parent family, the prospect of living in poverty goes down dramatically. The opportunities that the child will be able to achieve increase dramatically. So we can make changes in the way our culture works to help bring people away from violence and give them opportunity and bring them in the American system. The greatest failure we've had with regards to gun violence in some respects is what is known as Fast and Furious, which was a program under this administration, and how it worked exactly, I think we don't know precisely, but where thousands of automatic and AK-47 type weapons were given to people that ultimately gave them to drug lords. They used those weapons against their own citizens and killed Americans with them.
All right, folks, once again, that was Room 2012 from Afropunk. Definitely check out afropunk.com. Check out boldaslove.us. Check out blackrockcoalition.org. There's a lot more to hip-hop, folks. Matter of fact, check out undergroundhiphop.com, even in the hip-hop genre. Undergroundhiphop.com. There's a lot of different venues and websites to get your urban alternative music. Anyway, that was Governor Mitt Romney from last week, the second debate. The third and final debate takes place tomorrow, so that should be pretty interesting. Let's hope that Barack Obama is able to maintain his high spirits. All right, with that quick monologue / diatribe that he went into, Mitt Romney has been catching some heat. Of course, he caught some heat for the binders of women. That is problematic. He mentioned this whole deal about binders of women. And now if you want to go into another female-centric misstep, we have the single female thing. Actually, it really should not be a gender issue, because he really talked about single parents, or you could talk about absentee fathers. You don't necessarily have to say single mothers, but it's being positioned to be a slant against single mothers. I don't really have a problem with what he said. Maybe he was real slick about the Fast and Furious thing. He was real slick about that. But as far as his rationale, you know, he was talking about gun violence, needing to get rid of these automatic weapons, and then he goes into this discussion of ultimately young people not receiving the correct parenting. And I think that he's onto something. I don't really have a problem with what he says. Now, it also reminds me as to, once again, anytime I have pangs, and it happens, pangs of should I maintain my conservative positioning? Or if I go through a period of angst, should I maintain my conservative positioning? This type of thing brings me right back to the center, or brings me right back to being a conservative. You start to see what political correctness does to the discourse, what it does to our people, and what victimization does to our people. We always, or many of us, those who are overwhelmingly progressive, we have this whole thing of being victims. We can't take straight talk. We can't take straight talk. Let me give you an example. Oh, for my Latin friends, por ejemplo. The captain likes that. I'm looking at this op-ed piece in the Huff Post, written by this young lady, her name, Monique Ruffin. It's entitled Mitt Romney, Single Parents, and Gun Violence. This is what she says. For me, the low point in Tuesday night's debate was when Mitt Romney blamed single parents for contributing to gun violence in America. I felt myself gasp because I am a single parent. Now, I'm going to stop there. This is the problem. We can't discuss certain things because you get personally offended when he may not be talking about you personally. The data is out there, Captain. We see the prisoners. They will tell you that the parenting, that their parenting was not where it should have been. Let's not talk about single mothers. Let's talk about, and I agree with this, let's talk about absentee fathers. We have a whole host of young people of color in Chicago and other major cities. Chicago right now, we know the block is hot. We know the block is hot. They're likening Chicago to 70s Beirut. This is true. But we can talk about East St. Louis. We can talk about Brownsville, New York, or East New York, or Oakland, or Camden, New Jersey, or Newark, New Jersey. We can talk about Richmond, VA. We can talk about we can talk about Miami. There are certain pockets where we have nihilistic young black and brown folks. And actually, you talk about the Midwest and talk about lower tier white youth whose background is shoddy. The background, the parenting does contribute to young folks wanting to take out their differences in a criminal, violent fashion. Now, there has been a spate of gun violence where you're dealing with Aurora or what happened in Wisconsin. We know that that occurs as well. But the stats really point toward the inner cities and major league gun violence. It's going down. It's going down. It's going down. This young woman, Ms. Ruffin, chose to interject herself or see herself in Mitt Romney's argument. Why? If you happen to be a single parent and you are on top of your game, if you're on your game, then you have nothing to worry about. But there are a number of parents, mothers, fathers, or lack thereof, where you see visibly the chaos. You're looking in the eye of the storm. And we want to pretend that this is not reality. Romney was right on this. And it's disingenuous. Matter of fact, and I'm going to give it to the captain. One of the shows on YouTube, I can't recollect the name of the show. The name of the show, but liberals. I don't want to just browbeat liberals, but it's a liberal show. And the first thing they say is, this argument that Mitt Romney came up with, isn't it ironic that he says this argument in front of Barack Obama, who comes from a single-parent situation? Wait a minute. And then they say, well, you know, yes, sure. It would be reprehensible that the outcome of a single-parent household would be a president. Where is – please. That's a – please. I can't even complete my sentence on this, Captain. As if Barack Obama's situation is typical. It's atypical. As if it's typical that would be the outcome. When we talk about some of these other single-parent homes and we're talking about violence and the criminal populations and their backgrounds. Their backgrounds are what they are. Your thoughts, Captain?
Here's the problem with Americans. Americans always want to tune in to the exception and not the rule. Now, people hate when I do this now. They hate when I do this. When I come with statistical analysis, because it stops all emotional, foolish rhetoric. You go into a prison, what do you see? Most of the men there in prison and I could say most of them, all right? That means more than 50%. Most of the men there, they have mamas, okay? I'll say it that way, mommies. They do not have fathers. Most of them come from single-parent households. Most of them do not have a high school diploma. We're just saying at least, we're not talking about bachelor's, master's, PhDs, and doctorates. There might be a couple of those people in prison too, but most of those people that are in prison, they do not have a high school diploma, and they come from a single-parent household. And they were also in there for drug-related crimes, which happen to be violent crimes. Now, let's back up now. That's statistical analysis. Of course, there's going to be exceptions to that rule, meaning which the single mother will raise a very prominent child, a child that does very well in society. But that's not the rule. Let's stop that foolishness. Now, here's the next problem that Americans have. If I say there's jobs over here, here's the requirement. All right, if you have a master's, you just walk in. Or you have to have 10 years experience, work experience in this field. The rest of you people, forget about it. That's all I'm accepting. The rest of these people get mad. They have a problem. Why couldn't I get a job? Why are you giving the person with the master's or the person with 10 years experience? Hello, because that's the requirement. That's what's necessary. The rest of you, you made your own decisions in life. And because of those decisions that you made, you get this result. We all have the same 24 hours. We all have the same 7 days a week. This is what was necessary. People get upset with that, and that's the reality of it. Now, back to statistical analysis, okay? When we look what's happening on the street, on the gun violence, one, it is in our Constitution. Yes, the right to bear arms. The right to bear arms to protect yourself, okay, against a tyrannical government and everything else, ray. Not necessary to kill the next man over the turf. When you start to look at where the killers, and I'll say black on black for most part, Latin on Latin for most part, when you start to see and check out their backgrounds, people, look at the home they come from, look at the area they come from, what's going on? It's two things. It's normally just what I said, they're in the prison system. Lack of the two-parent household and also lack of the basic levels of education. That's why a lot of times people devolve down to gang culture, because they're lacking those two things. And if the shoe fits, you just wear it, baby. That's just what it is. That's the reality of it, and that's the God-honest truth. And you cannot refute the statistical analysis, and people hate when I say that, but that's the reality of it. That's the reality of it. Now, that does not mean, because America always likes to tune into the exception, oh, I slept on the street for 3-4 years, and I became the lawyer, I became the doctor, I became the millionaire. You are the exception, and yes, you should be celebrated. But it's not that many people that are going to follow behind you. Most drug dealers don't make it. Most people in that situation don't make it. That's the reality of it. It's not a Colgate-Palmolive situation. Colgate likes to, you know, if you put out a product, they put out a next product, and they say, me too. They follow a formula. It's not a formula for success, that. You're someone that wasn't supposed to make it, and you did make it. And that's the reality. So, people, we just need to stop. Just stop. The shoe fits, just wear it and just hone up. Man up, as they say. Manage the position. Man the position. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, absentee patriarchs is a reality, Captain. And, you know, this is why I talk about, you know, we can, you know, some folks can hate on Stacey Dash, the actress Stacey Dash. They can hate on her. I don't know what her reasoning is for supporting Romney. But I support her right to do that without vitriol and without, you know, anger and all kinds of derision. But there's this issue of victimization. I see we have a caller. Caller, we'll get to you in one moment. This issue of victimization, where we can't talk to our people straight. I tell you, Captain, when I see celebrities, black folk of note,
and they're always shouting out their mama, only their mama. The father is in a is a puff of smoke. And this has become a common trope with black folk, a common meme. It is embarrassing right now. It is an embarrassment, and it has to be corrected. And the fact that we are not seeing very little black, strong black male involvement with the raising of these children, it does have a connection with some of this gun violence out here on the streets. It just does. Quickly, before we go to the call, I saw something on the internet, a news clip that referenced this whole Chief Keef and Little JoJo debacle. For those who are in the know or those who are living under a rock, this is kind of a local Chicago thing. But the rapper of note now is Chief Keef. He's only 70 years old. I think he's bipolar, already barely 18, already in a whole lot of trouble. He was under house arrest. But all this adds to the mystique. It adds to the record sales, unfortunately. Little JoJo is no longer with the living. And allegedly there was some kind of battle between these two, on wax and off wax. Little JoJo was out of here. His funeral, his wake, his fan base showed up to the wake, disrespect the family, to try to overturn the cabinet. They're singing his lyrics at the funeral. The lyrics are not, they're not brothers going to work it out lyrics. They're not Public Enemy upliftment lyrics. They're not. His mother speaks, not the father. You never see the father, ladies and gentlemen. His mother speaks, and she says they were going to do, you know, his enemies, so to speak, were doing him in. They were jealous. They didn't want to see him make it. He was going to make it. He was going to make it singing these vile lyrics, this gang imagery. All you see is the mother. The mother is lauding, coddling his imagery. But it is what it is. And we say these things because we're trying to save lives. It's time to be honest that there's a cultural component with many of our black and brown youth that feeds into this violence. The cultural component and the absentee fathers, it is what it is. All right, folks, let's go to the phones. Let's open up the lines. Okay, caller, 916, welcome to AfroNerd. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, it's Big Sexy calling from Sacramento again. Wanted to just say hi right quick and follow up on what the captain was saying about people of color, you know, that includes me, when there's a job requirement that says you've got to have a master's degree, a doctorate, or X years of experience. It's never about a person thinking, okay, I need to go get that experience. I need to go get that degree. No, it's about why can't I have what he got? I deserve stuff too. No, you don't. If a person is not prepared to put in the work, then they cannot expect, and I'm sick of this country and our tired whole premise of expectation, you don't get this. You don't deserve this. You know, that's why, you know, I worked so hard to get, you know, my degrees because I knew going in, okay, I want to do this. What does it take for me to do this? I got to get that. Fine. I went and got that. I didn't beef about it. That's just how it is. Now, as far as Stacey Dash goes, and let me be completely real here. I'm talking to the fellas. Guys, all you guys who've been ripping on her, you know and I know that if she walked up to you one-on-one and said what she said, you would not give a damn because she's beautiful. The fact that she has her own opinion that breaks away from the hive mind, I'm so tired of that shit. You know, why can't her opinion be hers and not get shit on? They need to leave this woman alone and let her vote for whoever the hell she wants to vote for. That's why we have a secret ballot. If you don't like it, so what? If you don't want to vote for who she's voting for, then don't. Vote for your own conscience. But the key is, get up and vote. And go do some goddamn work. Sorry, guys. Had to get that off my chest.
No problem, man. We appreciate that. And, B.S., you know, you're always welcome on our show. And we appreciate your opinion. And what you say, I mean, it is what it is. I had no problems with her because at the end of the day, and I thought about this, and I want our audience to understand what I'm saying implicitly. There's such a cultural thing going on BS, such a cultural thing with us where we, like you said, the hive mind, going back to the comic books, to the Celestial, is it Celestials? I'm forgetting my comic book lore, but the Unimind, the whole Unimind, where all of us get the Eternals, correct, thank you. The Eternals, where all these demigods get together and become one pulsating brain. They all get together and we all think, it's like the Borg, Star Trek's Borg. It is killing us. And what I've been thinking about this in reality. You can paint the Republicans as racist. Okay, they're racist. All right, you can say that if you want to put that out there. Whatever. But the bottom line is, when these people get into office, why isn't there a contingent of black folk that posit questions to them? In other words, the Republicans as well as the Democrats should have answers for black situations. We are so boxed in to being Democrats that if we lose, we don't have a foot in the door with the Republicans. The Republicans should be, we should be just as passionate with a Republican answer to deal with the ills of black folk as it would be for Democrats. We shouldn't let them have a way out. Why don't we ask? I mean, this is just logic. I'm not a brain surgeon. This is just logic. We seem to let the Republicans off with having responses to black situations. We should be in their face and say, listen, you're running the country now. See, we're so passionate about Barack Obama because of his ethnicity that, well, when are you going to fix all these black problems? Forget Barack Obama. Whoever sits in the White House for whatever period of time should be passionately asked, what are you going to do for us? But because we're so lockstep with progressive politics, when we lose, we don't even ask them, what are you going to do about inner city crime? What are you going to do about black upward mobility? What are you going to do about AIDS in the black community? The question should be asked to whoever is sitting in the White House and from whatever political bent they possess. But we don't do it. That's why a Stacey Dash, lover or hater, and I'm on BS with what he says. She is a looker. She is a looker. She's definitely an Afro nerd type of chick. I'm going to say it like that. The captain knows what I'm talking about. She's my style. I don't have a problem with her. Captain, what are your thoughts on what I'm saying?
I don't have a problem with Stacey Dash. I loved her since Clueless. Well, we're dead on. Everyone's dead on. Big Sexy's dead on. You're definitely dead on. You know, that's the reality of it. You know, that's the reality of it. You got to get it together. Everybody just got to get it together.
But see, you know? I mean, if we're going to be Machiavellian, even Tupac knew this. If we're going to be Machiavellian, why there should be a group of black folks that, okay, let's say they don't necessarily want to be Republican, but they should take the hit. Take the hit, register as Republicans, establish a black Republican bloc, and then position yourself to have questions and an agenda on the Republican side that when Republicans exchange power, because there's going to be a point where that it will be an exchange, maybe not this year, hopefully, but at some point there will be an exchange of power with the Republican Party, that there should be some agenda where there's a Republican response and there is a Democratic response. But the way we go about it now, It boggles the mind. It boggles the mind. All right. You know what, Captain? I'm going to continue. We only have about 5 minutes remaining. And this other topic, this next topic, is a pretty hot one. And honestly, I don't know how to weigh in on this. I just happened to peruse The Root,
Dr. Henry Louis Gates' outfit, The Root. Excellent blog, theroot.com. I think it's connected with the Washington Post, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, recent polling comes out, new data stating that black young men are skewing higher with a gay identity. Let me repeat that. What they're saying now, not just gay, not just black men, but by minority men or minority people, when polled, are identifying themselves of a alternative lifestyle more than whites. That there seems to be skewing more that way, all of a sudden, maybe. This is a Gallup poll courtesy of the Williams Institute at UCLA's law school. And this was released actually Thursday. They polled more than 121,000 people, and it's coming off as if, again, more young black, Hispanic, and Asian men are aligning themselves with the LGBT community more than white folk. And I'm trying to find out why. What is it? Not that I want to come off as a homophobe. I'm not about that. I'm not trying to give some kind of, I don't know, value judgment. But I'm thinking this, maybe it's something to do with the last segment, Captain. The lack of strong male leadership. Could that be a reason why we're seeing more young black men now all of a sudden identifying themselves as gay now, all of a sudden? What are your thoughts on this, Captain?
Well, you see, you have to be careful with that statement. You have to be totally careful. And you worded it very well, so that was very good. The reality of it is always a possibility that might have always been the case, and they're just very comfortable now even in a poll saying that this is the way they felt. That always might have been the case. This might have been something that's always might have been there. But now you've got to the point where it's just comfortable to say this is who I am and what I am. Minorities might not have been as comfortable as before.
Well, Captain, I'm sure they would be comfortable with polling. I'm sorry, go ahead. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. That joke was just waiting. It was waiting, man.
A lot of people, you know, are in denial. Now it's no more the denial era. We're not in the denial era anymore. It is you are who you are, you know, and that's just what it is now, you know. And before, maybe if you wanted a tattoo, you wouldn't get one. Now it's just I'm going to get the tattoo, and they have to accept me. So what if the tattoo is on my neck or face and I'm getting ready to go look for a job? They have to accept me. We're just in that era now.
Well, isn't it YOLO? You only live once and only God can judge me, the Generation Y anthems? Captain, you know what? We got about a minute, and we're going to have to pick this up on Wednesday's Midweek and Review show. Folks,
absolutely.
BS, Big Sexy, all you guys and fellow listeners, ECG, continue listening. We appreciate the support. We'll be back on Wednesdays. Let's go to a quick funk break. I played this last week. I love this rendition. This is 100 Miles Per Hour, the Prince version. We'll see you on Wednesday. It's been real. Let's groove.
Love that soul.